Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Chris Deagle here with you this morning in our studio. We have a very interesting guest, an authority actually on psychometrics and psychometric testing, Chuck Russell. He's the president and founder of Best Work and part of Data Leadership, which is a very interesting company that specializes in assessment technology. Now, you know, as you'll find out, Chuck has been in that business for over 20 years as the author of A Right Person, Right Job, Yes or No book, and has been a sought-after speaker for a number of years on the subject. In his background, he's also created over 500 unique assessment reports and three assessment systems, including cognitive and personality instruments. I am delighted to welcome you this morning, Chuck. I'll find out how screwed up I really am before this is over with, I hope.
No, I don't know. It looks like you're doing pretty well.
Yeah. Well, we're really glad you could come on our show today. Tell us what psychometrics is and how you got into that business.
Well, very simply, we measure how people think, learn, and behave. And these are basically things that are hardwired. They don't change. In other words, they're the way you are for most of your life, which is a good thing because that gives you a starting point, gives you a foundation to build on. And what we've discovered is that the more that you know about that foundation, the more specifically you understand your particular strengths, the better able you are to position your work, your life, your actions to take advantage of those strengths.
When you got involved with business, it really wasn't directly with this field at all, was it?
No, not at all. I'd actually been doing consulting and training, sales training, senior management training, things like that. And I had the same training experience that most professionals in training have, where you do the very best job you can think of, and about a third of the people just do wonderfully. They take off like homesick angels, and wow, that was fantastic. And about a third of them do okay, and they do better, and the people say, well, the training was pretty good. But you always had about a third of the people, it just didn't click for them. The training didn't make a difference in the way that they did their jobs, even though they participated and did things. And so that was just the way it was. You just said, well, I guess I could change this or that. Well, a friend of mine bought a testing company in 1990 and asked me to help him with it. And it turned out that no one really knew the market. No one knew what was out there. And I don't believe that you can go to market with anything if you don't know what else, what's the competition, what's the state of the market now, what's the state of the industry. So I basically spent about 2 years taking hundreds of tests, going to every conference that was offered, collecting an incredibly boring library of books on the subject, had the privilege of working with some of the top people in North America and Europe. And what I discovered were a couple of things, which I wrote a book in 1995 called Right Person, Right Job, Yes or No, based on what I learned. I learned there were 80,000 occupationally related assessments in the English language.
Amazing. 80,000.
80,000. Now, the interesting thing is the technology was blind to people because the reports came out of their new laser printer. They all looked good. They were jazzy, great graphics and stuff. And people couldn't understand the difference between, or never could recognize the difference between the one that came from 1920 technology and 1990 technology. And so in the book, I said that all assessments were good for some purpose, but none were good for every purpose. And so that was one of the ideas in there. The most important idea, however, was I discovered there were actually very good instruments that measured hardwired traits and abilities. And if you just think about that, if there's hardwired traits that don't change with coaching and training, then that shatters our paradigms on hiring, training, and management.
We'll fix them in post doesn't work.
Yeah, you know, it's not quite like video. We can't fix it in post. In other words, if you weren't someone who could be persuasive or deal with confrontation, you weren't going to close a sale. It didn't matter how much sales training I did. You just couldn't do it. It wasn't like you didn't know the techniques. Mm-hmm. It's just you were uncomfortable with the conflict. And if you weren't wired to handle details, all the training in the world wasn't going to help you with that. It was like being a basketball player. If you were 4 feet tall going to slam dunk college, it was going to be an exciting event. You were going to be thrilled by it, challenged by it. The problem was that darn hoop was just too high and you weren't going to be able to execute.
Same kind of thing, but yet so often we put people in positions and expect the four-foot-high person to be able to do slam dunks.
Exactly. We think that because this person did this job well, they can do this other job equally well, and we didn't recognize that they had a gift for the other one. They had the strengths for the other one.
That's an interesting point that we didn't recognize. You know, why don't we recognize?
Well, I don't think if we have the data, we can certainly make those decisions, but we don't see it. We see people as a whole. We don't take it apart. Now, interestingly, in sports, we do. You see, in sports, we recognize there's not an inherent strength except in the sport that we're asking you to play. 7 feet tall is incredibly good on the basketball court. How does it work in a coal mine? I mean, it's a disaster. In other words, you know, if you're 400 pounds, you're going to be a hit in sumo wrestling, but pole vaulting is out of the question. All these things are really clear, and we could get even finer if we think mm-hmm. about baseball.
Yeah.
In other words, you got 9 baseball players. Mm-hmm. The pitcher is not a good catcher. He doesn't play first base as well. The outfielders can't pitch. We put people in there because of data, mm-hmm. because of the things that they could do. In business, we can do the same thing.
You know, yet so few businesses seem to think that way. You know, they in my experience, and I've been in more than one or two of them, it's like, okay, you know, you're doing a pretty good job here. We think, you know, we've got this other thing, and we think maybe you'd fit. You know, are you interested? So, you know, how do businesses, come to decisions now, and how would, you know, your process help them?
Well, imagine this. Let's play in the medical world for just a minute. The very best medical minds 40, 50 years ago, you come in with a headache, their very best thinking could have said, well, we don't know if it's because you slept funny. We don't know if you got bopped on the head. We don't know if it's a brain tumor. We don't have any idea. In other words, the best thinking would have said, I believe what we're going to have to do is go in and brain surgery. We're going to have to open up your head and see if we can tell what's causing the problem. Mm-hmm. Today, you'd get an MRI. Actually, this is actually a very real story to me. I have a good friend who had this experience last year. He had, and they said, there's something going on, and we don't know what it was. 50 years ago, brain surgery was what would have happened. Instead, he got a CAT scan or MRI, and they said, oh, you've got a little benign tumor here. Take these green pills, and about 6 weeks, it should go away. And it did. Now, those people weren't smarter. They had better data.
Mm-hmm.
So today, we have the capability of showing a sales manager simple data that says, 48 of your salespeople, these 12 can't close a sale. These 15 can't deal with the solution sale. It's too complex for them. They're great mm-hmm. product salespeople. Mm-hmm. In other words, anybody can understand that data. So you don't have to persuade anybody to use it.
You don't have to do open brain surgery.
Exactly.
You can do it with, you know, non-invasive methods and get better data.
Yeah. I'll give you a crazy example. See, the power of data is specific knowledge. You don't have to persuade people to use it. I was speaking to a group of 100 people the other day in a room, and I said, I want to give you the difference between specific data and generalized data. And I said, now, if I tell you all after the end of the talk, I want you to be very careful as you go to your cars in the parking lot. I said, is that really going to affect anyone's behavior? Not really. Nice thought, Chuck. You know, no one's actually going to do anything differently. Let's make it a little bit more specific. As you go to your car, you want to be very careful because Zoo Atlanta just called, and they said that due to some crazy circumstances, a crate of spitting cobras has broken up in this parking lot, and they can't find them. And I said, boy, will I get some different behavior. I had people saying, I'm camping out here. I'm not going anywhere.
I'm calling a cab.
Yeah. So the power of data is specific. And when people hear specific data, they automatically do different things.
You know, there are all sorts of assessment tools. I mean, you said there were 80,000.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And some are better than others. I mean, there's some very common ones that you run into in business, Myers-Briggs being
sure.
one, you know, DISC being another.
Sure.
You know, what's different about those kind of assessments and the ones that you've put together?
Well, it's important to understand that in the assessment world, it stands on two things. One is the theories of personality. Mm. DISC, for example, is from a theory about several thousand years ago that Hippocrates looked at the world and he said, I think I see four kinds of people. He called them choleric, melancholic, sanguine, and phlegmatic. Terrible terms. Marketing would have been awful. Today,
all you phlegmatics, pay attention.
Yeah. So today, they have dominant, influencing, steady, compliant, things like that, all the things that make up DISC. The word groups that made DISC were developed in 1928,
really?
William Marston. He also drew Wonder Woman, by the way, and invented the lie detector. Just a couple of small things. Myers-Briggs is from the 40s. It was Carl Jung's theory. He said, instead of four kinds of people, I see 16. He also said that this is just an interesting parlor game. Don't take it seriously. Well, they forgot that part. But number one is we don't look at personality that same way anymore. Mm-hmm. Today, universally, any credible psychologist knows what we call the big five personality factors, that those are stable. They don't change over our lifetime. They were probably set by 12 years old is the conservative number. Mm-hmm. Some people say even earlier. Each of those has some little facets, the six facets. So it breaks it down, but you've got these 30 things that have been identified, tested, researched dozens and dozens of times, and that's what everybody agrees is the way things are.
That's the best science we have today.
That's the best science we have today, and everyone agrees that the big five are rock solid.
Now, what are those big five?
Well, they have a lot of different names. It's openness to new experience, for example, is one. One is how you deal with emotion. There's some horrible terms, negative emotionality. If you can figure that one out, it's pretty good. It's extroversion, introversion is a very common one, how you deal with people. It's are you tend to help the world or compete in the world. So there's a lot of different versions of it, but those will describe anything to do with our human behavior. They're the basis of how we make decisions about how to act. Cognitive science also has changed dramatically. Today, we know that IQ is a flawed concept, not entirely wrong, not entirely right. What we know is important is how quickly do you learn. And quick is not always good. One of my clients for 10 years was Coopers & Lybrand when they were a big deal in the world. Now it's PricewaterhouseCoopers. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, their audit partners with MBAs from Wharton, Kellogg, wherever, were in the 30th, 40th percentile in speed of processing. You think about that. They're obviously top-notch, brilliant people, but the job that they did was a slow process job. Audits are slow. Crunch things. Methodical. Guess what? If you learn fast, you did a lousy job. You made mistakes. Skipped over stuff. Tax partners with those MBAs from Wharton Kellogg were in the 60th, 70th percentile in speed of processing. Tax is more complex. It's changing. It's dynamic. All of their consulting partners were in the 90th percentile because they were walking into a new show every day, had to get a lot of information, come up with new solutions. So if that kind of makes sense, it's a good way of thinking. So what I love about it is it shatters our thinking of smart, not smart. All people are smart in different ways, though. And if we put them into situations that match their particular kind of smart, they're brilliant.
I've always said in business, the job of a good manager is to put somebody in the way of success.
Oh, that's a great line. I'm going to borrow that one.
Yeah, feel free. It's worth exactly what it cost.
Do you know, I'll give you a really visual, crazy example of smart. I have a client that does metal stamping, and there's a part that they make that goes on a golf cart. It's a little chrome bar, and it's about a foot long, and there's a plastic button goes in each end of it. Well, I've been out in their facility, and there's a woman there who picks up one of the chrome bars, puts a plastic button in it, pushes it into a machine press, comes down and attaches that. Then she turns it around, puts a plastic button in, and she does that. She does this all day for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And you look at someone doing that, and a lot of people might say, what in the world did she do? She's a genius at doing detailed routine work. A genius at detailed routine work. I would lose my fingers the first day. A whole bunch of people would, because totally incapable of doing that job. Mm-hmm. That is equally hard as someone doing nuclear physics or whatever job people want to find.
That's right. You know, it's a very different, you know, it's a different, it's, you know, your mind works differently.
Exactly.
Yeah, and somehow or other, though, you know, we all, in many jobs, we kind of think of people as being interchangeable. You see that a lot in outsourcing.
We take jobs as being constant, and we think people are variable. In other words, I can move people around, and they will adjust to different jobs. In reality, people are fixed. They've got those strengths. That's what they've got. And we can make the job adjust to them. Very simple. You know, we don't see the Braves take the pitcher out and move him to second base because that might be a good thing to do today. Nobody does this because they've got better data. They know that won't work. See, today, mm-hmm. Best Work Data gives you that same level of specificity so you can see, wait a second, this person's going to be great in customer support, but they can't go out and sell. That's not what their job is. This person would be good at managing this region, but not this one.
You know, it makes a ton of sense. Yeah, and you would think that what percentage of businesses are actually trying to do this with data as opposed to gut feel?
Well, let me answer that a couple of different ways. One is there's over 75% of American businesses use testing in some way, shape, or form. They aren't all using good stuff that gives you that kind of data. There's a model that people have used for a long time. We're going to test our top performers, and we'll create a model, benchmark, profile, whatever they want to call it. Now, that was an old way of doing things, and that was a good way when there was a time when that was the best idea we had. Today, we live in a dynamic world. It changes radically. I've got clients we're in April. The business that their business plan in January has completely changed. Their whole marketing strategy has changed. The very jobs have changed. So the idea we can create a static benchmark doesn't work. If you have data, the data applies to every kind of job, so you're able to make better decisions with it.
Yeah. It seems like every business should be asking themselves, what is the very best tool I could use to assess the people and put them in the right place? Or alternatively, if they're in the right place but they lack essential skills, how can I identify those? You know, what are the challenges in getting businesses to understand the power of good data?
The overwhelming flood of people in the marketplace that are selling outdated, obsolete things. In other words, I've been a consultant for a long time, so I've dealt with a lot of industries, a lot of different markets. There's nothing is like this. I've dealt with people who sell tests, and they are absolutely convinced that whatever they're selling is the very best, and they can't name three other tests. Okay. In other words, it's a blind item.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I sold furniture, and we sold mattresses and box springs. Okay, those are blind items. In other words, here's one. This one is $200. This one is $500. That's $1,000. And you're relying on the salesperson to tell you what's inside. Yeah, you know, that's...
You're not a mattress expert.
Right. So in the assessment world, most people are using whatever was sold to them. Mm-hmm. They really don't understand the qualitative differences. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we did to help people is there's a site called aboutassessments.com.
Oh.
It's a neutral site, doesn't sell anything. We created it to teach lay people about qualitative differences in testing so they could sort things out a little better, make their own decisions, but it helps them in a very simple, and in fact, parts of it are funny. So it's kind of a cool place. It's aboutassessments.com.
So, you know, when you meet people that are using an assessment tool now,
sure.
You know, how do you get those people to open their minds to there might be better a way to get better data than they're getting now?
We have fun with it. Well, we just did a show, and we had a table, and on it we had a typewriter, an old wooden tennis racket, an old flip phone, I mean, one of the early flip phones, and a slide rule. And we said, do you know what all these things have in common? They all still work. See, the catchy thing about testing, it doesn't stop working. It's just not as good as what you'd use today. See, it's technology. The thing that we have going for us is that people are used to technology. I've been in companies, and one company was using an old product. And I said, you realize that what you're using there is about 40 years old? And I said, and you probably wouldn't be caught dead using a cell phone that's 2 years old. You think about that. See, we're used to things being upgraded. And so what people are able to see today is, wow, this changed. I didn't know that. So the more educated, we want everyone to be educated.
You know, for some real-world examples, I mean, I'm familiar with DISC for a variety of reasons and Myers-Briggs, but if you know, what do you learn from your assessment tools that would change how I think about where I would put somebody in sales?
Okay.
You know, if from, let's say, a DISC assessment versus an assessment from you.
Well, first of all, DISC doesn't actually measure anything. Most people don't know that. Even people selling it don't actually understand it. See, people do. There's three things you can sort into a model.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in other words, you can create a model. DISC essentially is a 4-part model saying we think the world. If it was a pizza, we think there's 4 slices of pizza there. You know, one's got pepperoni and one's got cheese and less like that. That's DISC.
Anchovies.
Yeah, that's what DISC is. And so DISC gives you some questions that sort you into one of those. Mm. Now, half the people in the world will produce a different score if they take it again. Interesting.
Interesting.
All right. Now, what that does, the power of it, it introduces people to the idea that there's different personality types, and, wow, this is cool. Great intro. I used to teach DISC a long time ago. Now, that doesn't measure anything. It simply oriented you inside that model. A Myers-Briggs model has 16 parts.
16 slices of pizza.
Exactly. There are 16 slices, and we can call you an ENTJ, and that helps you have a point of reference to understanding this personality model that Jung created.
Okay.
There's one called the Enneagram that's got 9. Marcus Buckingham, Strength Finder, has 34.
So these are like, you know, pigeonholes in a post office, and, you know, depending on the address, you kind of get put in one of those.
Exactly. Underneath all of these... Mm-hmm. are your real hardwired traits and abilities. So we're really looking deeper. It's like an MRI compared to...
It's like using the giant Hadron Collider in CERN versus, you know, a linear accelerator.
Exactly. And boy, there got to be a small number of people. Fortunately, I went to Georgia Tech majoring in physics, and I got that one. Okay. But it's like an MRI. If you've ever seen an MRI... You see every bloody thing. I'll give you a crazy, crazy story. A guy on my tennis team he says, oh, my God. He says, you know, my son hurt his leg playing softball the other day. So I took him to the family doctor. Family doctor looked at it, and he said, he x-rayed it, and he says, well, I think it's a strain. It should be fine. And so we left, and he says, I just wasn't comfortable with the answer.
Hmm.
So I called somebody. I said, do you know someone who's a sports specialist? And he said, yeah. I went to the sports specialist. He said, so tell me what you've done so far. He says, well, our doctor took an x-ray and did the... He says, well, that's the... He said, the problem is the x-rays don't show a soft tissue. And he said, so we need to get an MRI. We need better information, mm-hmm. better data. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, he says, he gets the MRI. He puts it up on the plate. And this is where it gets really cool. He turns on the little light so you can see it. And the dad says, what's that little black line right there? And he says, you know, that's the problem. He says, that's a little tear and this is your son has, and this is how we're going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the dad wasn't even a doctor.
Mm-hmm. And it made it that obvious.
It was that obvious. It was better data. Now, the other doctor mm-hmm. wasn't...
A bad doctor.
Wasn't a bad doctor.
He just didn't have the same tool.
Didn't have the same data. One person had better information.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask about what's the difference, today people use normative instruments. That means is we all are familiar with the normal bell curve.
Mm-hmm.
What you did when you created an instrument is you tested lots and lots of people, and you found out if you give it to a lot of people, how are those answers distributed across the population? And in effect, you create a measuring stick that you can now apply to people. You're actually measuring things. You can't compare. Did you know that you can't compare one disc to another? It's called ipsative measurement. Disc produces what's called ipsative measurement. It means self-measurement. It's only self-referential.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when I said, check the word that most describes you and the least describes you, to you, it was like chocolate pudding, chocolate cake, chocolate bars, and chocolate ice cream. In other words, there was little difference in those. Mm-hmm. And so you checked A and B or whatever. I took it, and to me, it was like chocolate bars, pine straw, pine bark, and pine needles. So there was a giant gap.
Mm.
With disc, you don't know what was the size of the gap. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Give you one other thing to make it really clear. Someone in Greenwich, Connecticut, you ask them, do you live far from work? And they say, no, in almost an hour, I'm in Manhattan. Someone who lives in Johns Creek says, in 30 minutes, I'm in Peachtree downtown. Someone in Rome, Georgia says, takes me about 5 or 10 minutes to be on Broad Street. Somebody else walks upstairs to their office. All of them said, it doesn't take me long to get to work.
There's no standard reference of measurement.
Exactly. So what you get with
it's like calling an inch, an inch doesn't mean an inch. It means whatever anything from a foot to a mile.
That's the challenge with disc.
Okay.
That's what happened is today you can accurately measure things rather than just get that generalization.
So you're having that specificity of measurement.
Yes.
We go back to our sales situation. You've got somebody that can't seem to close a sale.
Right.
A disc will tell you that they've got all these traits and behaviors and things. It looks like they'll be able to do it. What would your assessment tell?
Well, for example, just taking selling, let's imagine that bell curve for just a second. If I'm going to sell something to a business owner, think of that bell curve. Where is that business owner likely to be on the upper end of that scale in assertiveness? You can't persuade someone who you are not equal to or higher than to do anything. In other words, does that make sense? In other words, you can't persuade someone who if they're more persuasive than you are. Okay?
Yeah, they'll persuade you.
Exactly. They'll persuade you that they don't need it or it costs too much or it's something's different about it.
Something's wrong about it.
Exactly. So if I want someone to sell, first of all, I've only got half the population can sell to somebody else. If I get into business stuff and senior executives, they're going to be on the top end, so I need someone who is from the top end to sell to them.
So you've got to have somebody that
you can't get that level.
Yeah, you have to get the ranking that says, not that this person's somewhere on the scale, but I have to be able to measure where on the scale.
Exactly. I need to know where.
Yeah, and that's the difference, isn't it?
That's a giant difference. Yeah, you don't have a generalized idea, you have a specific idea. You don't know that they're a baseball player. You know that they're a pitcher that can throw 97 miles an hour, and they can run this fast, and they can do these things.
And their ERA is, whatever it is.
Exactly.
Down to, the thousands of a percent.
Exactly.
So
better data, better decisions, easy to do.
It also costs less
today.
Yeah, and what does this stuff cost? I mean,
hideously expensive. Sometimes it costs almost $1 an applicant.
My golly, egregious.
One of the things that Best Work Data is doing is, first of all, you want to know the mission of our company. very serious mission is to touch the lives of hundreds of millions of people so that they see themselves through their strengths, not their weaknesses, and so that they better understand other people. When you think about that mission and how it impacts a company, we don't want a local company that does really well. Fantastic. I want these to be accessible to anyone because it changes their lives. So we have a program. We sell unlimited license. A normal business can buy our system for less than $2,000. And that means they can test unlimited applicants. Today's world, the average company is getting 200 resumes or applications for a single job. We have one client that gets over 500 if they post a project manager job. Because of what we do, you can test all those people, and you can screen out the people who can't do that job early on. In other words, using your sales example, I don't want to really interview anyone who can't close a sale and can't deal with a complex sale at that level.
So they're going to have to be in the upper 20 percentile of that distribution.
Exactly. This is like the basketball coach mm-hmm. who's got 100 kids come out for the team that year. He can send the short kids home.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that they're not good. It's not that they're not wonderful kids and excited and motivated. It's just that they're not going to be able to compete at that
level.
At that level, exactly. Now, if he had 8 kids show up, he's going to play the short kids. But in today's world, the biggest problem that a lot of our clients are having is they're just swamped with resumes. And so I'm going to read them. All resumes read pretty much the same. I don't remember the last bad one I saw.
Because if you can't write a good one, there's somebody that will do it for you.
Absolutely.
So it's like that cute little commercial on TV. You know, my mother wrote, I love your LinkedIn, not your LinkedIn, but your Facebook profile. Well, my mother wrote it.
Yeah, my mother wrote it. I got something today. Somebody says, I can write your LinkedIn profile or whatever. It's just, there's all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But so it allows a company to screen out those mm-hmm. people. We've got one that calculated our stuff cost them 25 cents to test an applicant.
And you get a valid measurement from this. I mean,
you also every report that we produce mm-hmm. is written for an audience and a decision point. So at basic $2,000 thing, you get 28 different reports. You get pieces to screen out, pieces to select from. We give you behavioral event-based interview questions to use, and you get a specific description of how that individual will perform each element of the job.
So this is, you know, this is really tailored to the company and its specific needs.
Yes.
Is there kind of like a general version? I mean, obviously, DISC. I mean, you know, anybody could pay the money and take it online. Is yours the same way?
Well, you can get the system. You can certainly system, and anybody can use it. It's 25 minutes online.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who ever takes it gets an automatic report because we feel that's important. So that's not in the business's hands. We feel like if the business is testing someone, somebody should get some feedback. So that's automatic in our system. We have 15 job reports. So there are specific reports for persuasive sales, management, customer support, admin, financial, IT, driver, production, quality control, project manager.
Mm.
Everything is specific.
Do businesses get this off the bat? I mean, when you talk to somebody or they come to your seminar, do they really grasp this quickly?
Yeah.
So it's really a question of getting the word out.
It's just a question of getting the word out. We rarely ever have anyone not buy our stuff who sees it. It's funny. People are actually used to systems that require experts or certified training or things like that. Everything we write, our model is like we should be able to hand this to someone in the produce department of the grocery store, and they should be able to tell you what to do. It should be self-evident. We had a new client.
Decisionable by the average person.
I'll give you an example. We had a new client, and he called me, and he said, Chuck, I just tested my first person for this sales position. Can you walk me through how to use this because I haven't used it before? And I said, well, John, let me see if I can. I said, why don't you read me the first line there? And it says, cannot persuade people to take action. And he reads it down. He says, this is actually pretty easy to understand. He says, I didn't actually read it before I called you. He says, I can do this myself. You know, because our stuff is like that. We tell you specific things. It'll tell you an IT person, inconsistent with documentation, may stray from your proven procedures. Golly, you know, I mean, you can make your decision with that. Yeah. Someone described, we had a fairly well-known person who creates tests in the world. He read our stuff and he said, he called it virtual interview. He said, this is just like you could have the person sitting in front of you and they had to tell the truth and you said, how would you do this job? Well, I can't persuade people to buy. Okay.
Next.
Yeah, it's pretty much that simple.
Yeah, which is remarkable in specificity with these tests because so many of them do give you these great generalities that you can tell maybe there'd be a terrible fit, but when you're looking for degree of fit, you really have a problem.
Well, it's funny. Some of them say things like, John is very good with people, except that sometimes he needs to be alone.
Okay.
Well, or Eddie is good with details, but sometimes he makes mistakes with them. It'll be this, but not that. I mean, you don't know what to do.
Yeah,
with that.
I know DISC is kind of famous for that because they have an adaptive style and they've got a natural style.
Right. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
There are actually some other well-known tests that inside their reports, they will have conflicts that it will say, Sally is good at leading people. When you get down to the next paragraph, it says, people may have difficulty working for Sally with her style of leadership. And you're, whoa, which was that?
So, they're internally conflicted, which is a problem with any measurement tool.
They are. So I take a lot of pride in that we work hard not to do that. We have over 500 reports. We can customize. The system was built dynamically, so we can create something off the fly.
Yeah, that meets the requirements of a company because you have the basic underlying measurements that you can tailor. They don't change. I mean, these are core things about people as far as we understand people today.
Exactly. I think the other thing that's important about data, and the reason why we refer to what we do as providing data rather than the assessment concept, is that data is continual. You see, I may hire you with this report. That report also tells me how to manage you. It also tells me how you'll work with these other people. It also tells me your career path. It also tells me how you communicate. I can take your data and put it with the data of the other members of that work group, and I can look at you in aggregate and see how you are. I can engineer teams with it. You see, the problem with too many assessments is they become an event. It's a hiring event. You were an 88% match to this model. Okay, I've hired you. After that, everything in there is very generalized, so I just put it in a drawer. We believe that data should go on and on and on. I have two ways of dealing with you. I can know how to deal with you, or I could guess. We think knowing is a better way. So,
absolutely.
The more people you test inside a company, LexisNexis has been using our stuff for 5 years. Mm. It's the operating system for human resources.
Okay.
They even plan their training based on the data.
Well, they're huge.
If a company goes into, I ran into someone I know who's a business consultant. He says, I saw your stuff the other day. He says, I did a project at Lexis, and the first thing they handed me was, here's the data on the people you'll be working with. See?
What great insight.
Yeah, because it's one set of data. It's mm-hmm. It's not the flavor of the month. Mm-hmm. Here's a Myers-Briggs, here's a DISC, here's a that. All mm-hmm. those are cool yeah. events.
But better than nothing, but they're not optimal.
You're not optimal. You want data that is going to be with you. It's going to be with your employees. Mm-hmm. It helps you truly manage the talent inside your company.
And you can look at two people and say, this one's in the upper 25 percentile, this one's in the mid 25.
Exactly.
Which then kind of gives you a way to sort of look at, if we need a high-powered salesperson, let's go get the guy at the top of the scale rather than one in the middle. Somewhere.
You are absolutely right. We had a client use the data to put salespeople into the right region.
And sales is a good example because that is the hardest thing for most companies, you know, to find good salespeople that can do the job.
It is. They're actually good people out there, but people hire people because of how they interview, and they really want to hire them for how they can sell.
Yeah, and you know, as a salesperson, the easy, you know, being their job is selling. So I mean, you got a double whammy.
Yeah. You get sold by the
salesperson, but that doesn't mean he can sell your client or your product or your service.
Exactly.
So, if people are interested in this, Chuck, can they take it individually?
That's an interesting question. Yes, they can. We actually have a parallel company that provides a thing called Job Thoughts. That's for job seekers. It really tells them how to conduct their job search, how to interview and things like that, and even gives them tools to combine with their resume to sell themselves.
That's Job Thoughts.
JobThoughts.com. And then we have a very new part called Students in College, and that's studentsincollege.com. And this starts with high school students. You're going to be seeing more about this later. It's just launching. Mm-hmm. It starts, helps them see what type of college is going to be best for them, helps them sort out a major, helps them see how to prosper in school, mm-hmm. what are the pitfalls they're going to encounter. We've even got one called Insights for Parents that tell the parents how to communicate more effectively with the kids.
Fantastic. Because you get early insights to where your career path is likely to be.
Exactly. It's exactly what you do because grandpa was a doctor and dad's a doctor, maybe that's not the right match.
For you.
That all came about, I've got to say, because of clients asking, could you test my son or daughter? And probably my favorite was the son who had been in college for a year, and he said, can you help my son? He's miserable. And he's a really good student. Well, the kid was super fast in general reasoning, highly assertive, a wonderful person, low in rules. In other words, he woke up every morning with a new idea. Guess what his major was? Civil engineering.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, gee, Bob, why are you a civil engineer? He said, well, Dad said you can always get a job if you're a civil engineer.
Talk about misery in making.
The kid says, I really like the engineering aspect, but it's boring. He says, I don't get to use my imagination. And so I gave him a couple of books on industrial design, and he went nuts. Mm. And I said, industrial design is imagination and engineering combined. And he changed what he was doing, and now he's doing phenomenally well. That was the genesis of the idea of how do you help kids build their education on their strengths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Without guidance, I mean, you're left to fly in the clouds on your own.
You are, and tragically, many of the things that are provided to students are based on old interest thinking. You see, I may be interested in being a jet pilot, but that's not something I'm able to do. I may be interested in something. The question really is not am I interested, it's can I do that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see, and so data gives you a better look into that. So I'm
in what area are you likely to be a better fit, happier, do what you love to do so it really isn't a job?
Well, I'll give you a crazy, crazy picture. This is in one of my books. It's if you think of the population of jobs that a kid could go into, there's some jobs that'll be fantastic. There's some jobs that'll be okay. In other words, not fantastic, not bad, but okay. And there's some jobs that are going to be, oops, why in the world did I ever end up doing that? You know what testing really does? Testing identifies those. So you see, students, people have unlimited potential. There are only a small number of things that we can't do that we just don't match up with. So what I think is a more practical way to look at stuff, particularly with students, is to say, here, don't go there. Go anywhere else. You're going to be okay. That really is what we do in the hiring world. You see, when you're looking at job candidates, mm-hmm. you got some job candidates that will be fantastic stars. You got some that will be okay. You'll make money with them. They're going to be the middle of the the curve. And you've got some that are just, oops, why am I in this job?
They're the four-foot basketball players.
Exactly. So what our goal is to show companies, let's avoid those. That's easy to do. I mean, testing does that time and time again. Well, we're left with people who are going to be okay or really good. And that's how you win. You see, the team that wins the World Series, they're not winning because they've got nine stars. They're winning because they don't have anybody who lets the ball go between their legs or drops the fly ball or strikes down in the key situations. So what you're trying to do is eliminate the oops, and you will get your share of the stars.
Well, for people that want to get their share of the stars and avoid the four-foot-tall basketball players, how do they get in touch with you and your company, Chuck?
Bestworkdata.com.
That's complicated. Is there a phone number?
Is there a phone number? That's an interesting thing. Gosh, I am so technology-oriented. We actually have a phone number. It is. The phone number is 770-274-0515.
So you have your choice, technology or the old, you know, manual finger method for us antediluvians.
Yes, it's my son tells me that phone numbers, Dad, no one uses phone numbers. Email.
Or text. Well, you know, I guess we're showing that we've been on here long enough because we've aged a bit longer. It's been absolutely great having you on with us, Chuck. I hope that everybody takes away a lot of good information they can put to work in their companies. If you have a good company and you have a great story to tell and an interesting product that will help people move their business forward, we'd like to hear from you at Alpharetta Business Studio. Just email us. You can find us online at businessradiox.com. And thank you for being with us.